WildTalkRadio.com.
You are listening live, but not so live, live at the sold-out WTR Live Arena for CB Radio Not So Live. Live. Recapping everything that went down at AEW Dynasty. With your hosts, the producer, the intern, and the Keishi. Is this where we start chanting CEO, 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 CEO?
I mean... Is it, Brent? Is this where we start?
CEO! 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 Oh, wait, I'm sorry, that's just the song.
As I said, this is CB Radio Not So Live, live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Chat if you have Amazon Prime, link to your Twitch account. It's called Prime Gaming Support Channel. By clicking the purple rectangle button below the screen, you can use credit card Rockstock at the Fortnite item shop. Hashtag Epic Partner. I'm the producer. Joined, as always, by the intern.
What is up?
We also have a Keishi.
Hello.
Did we all survive the greatest wrestling match in the history of wrestling matches on American soil?
Please retire. Please. Oh, wait, that was the other match.
That was the other match. We all survived. We all survived the greatest wrestling match. Was that a...
Jeez, you guys are coming with all the shots.
Hey, that crowd, though small, was mighty.
Yes.
Sold out crowd. Sold out crowd. According to them. Keishi, though, said there were still tickets available, but sold out crowd.
I mean, not a ton. I just for fun, I went on to look, and there were a couple sections that had seats available, but it wasn't like overwhelmingly empty.
No.
It was 200 available, I think, at most.
Which is fine.
Honestly, for them, good job in choosing an arena that optically gave a good view.
And the numbers were up compared to the previous time they were there. So
yeah.
That's what counts when you go back to a city.
Yep.
But that's all the joking. Like, this was a good show. Dynasty was really good.
Top to bottom, yeah, we'll have things to say about individual matches and individual things, but overall, I would say AEW put together a fairly good show.
Yeah, I agree. I would say this is one of the better ones that I've watched.
Overall, yes. I don't think there was too much of a, why did they do that? There were questionable outcomes, but
there were some moments that we'll talk about.
It felt like, in terms of an AEW pay-per-view show, there wasn't a lot of questioning why they did certain spots in matches compared to previous ones where you go, I don't know if they should have been doing exactly that. So we had there Zero Hour, that's called, Brent? Kickoff?
Yeah, whatever. So we had the three matches on Zero Hour.
Run through them really quick.
So our first match of the night saw Matt Sydal, the hometown boy, with his brother Mike at ringside, taking on the newly turned and dastardly Trent Beretta. He got his name back.
All of his name back.
Yeah, because before it was just Trent, ? And now it's actually Trent Beretta.
Mm-hmm.
This match was all right for what it was. Trent was a little more vicious than he has been, but I need more from a Trent heel turn, and I know it's just the first week out, but it just feels like he's kind of there.
Okay.
And I mean, I don't know, I haven't seen a lot of, like, the New Japan style of Trent Beretta, because I know he did Roppongi Vice with Rocky Romero, and there's, you know, he's had a long history there. I don't know if he was ever really heel there, and if so, I don't know what his style is like. I would defer to Keishi for that.
I wasn't watching a lot of New Japan when they were doing Roppongi Vice.
Okay.
If memory serves, I don't know if he was ever really a heel in Roppongi Vice.
Okay.
I don't remember.
Then, like I said, I know it's only a week in, and there's plenty of room and time for him to kind of grow this, but for right now, it just feels weird. Like, he's not fully a heel, he's just kind of angry.
I think they're probably just slow burning it, because like the promo that he cut after he was like really beaten both of the Sydal brothers, and Chuck came in and he grabbed the mic and he's like, Chuck, I really don't like your attitude. Like, what's going on? You're kind of being an ass. And it's almost like he was just like very much like leaning into the, pot calling the kettle black, even though the kettle that he was referring to was not being a dick.
Yeah, I like the, I've called, I've texted, you haven't responded. It's just like, well, yeah.
Yeah, so like, I think because he attacked Orange and nothing else has really kind of come out of it yet, I think when they finally lean into, which I'm assuming, and I could be wrong, that Chuck doesn't align with him, and then Trent like really turn, I think Trent will really turn it on then. Or well, Chuck join in and they just become a couple of like a heel tag team. But I think that's variantly dependent on whether or not Chuck's still hurt.
I think he is.
Which for me would be awkward because the entire thing for them has been, you know, the music and the hugs and all of that. That's not going to work heel.
No.
Especially because, you know, oh, you got to give the people what they, and I mean, I know what they can do with that because Okada kind of did it in his match.
Boy, did he ever. I loved it.
But it's that kind of thing of like, you can do that, but it won't work past the first time.
Yeah.
And it's, so it's like with the music and the fact that Chuck is, you know, the Kentucky gentleman, and it just seems like, yeah, it seems like a Trent Beretta just solo run is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope Trent has the legs to be able to carry that, because otherwise, I really don't know if this is going to be a good thing.
Well,
I'll say this one thing, Case, before you go.
Yeah.
For someone who's probably been doing this the same, who's been doing this act for 5 years, probably doing something new, probably feels really good right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's
100% enjoying it. And like, I kind of agree with you. I don't know what's going to happen and how much legs this has after the like final confrontation with Orange. Like, you can have him, depending on Chuck's actual overall health, you can have him kind of attack Chuck. You can have him attack Rocky, even if Rocky's available for a beatdown in that respect. And then you have that final confrontation with Orange, but depending on what happens after that will really determine whether or not, like, how far Trent as a solo heel will go.
Well, because, and this is no slight to Trent Beretta, but there's a ceiling on him compared to people like a Swerve, an Adam Page, a Samoa Joe. You know, it's not going to be main event Trent Beretta.
No, I disagree. It will
be. I think he has potential to be.
He'll be main event Trent Beretta Rampage Fridays at 10.
That's the problem. But it's like looking at that and kind of like if we were to slot him in individually, like, yeah, you know, we did a tier thing a long time ago. But if you were to put him against, you know, people like Pac, even Pac's a bigger name and he's more of a draw. That's why I like. I mean, I hope that they can go somewhere with this with Trent and he can show like, yeah, he can support this, but if he can't, or if let's say the fans don't like latch onto this as much as they should, this could be bad.
He's going to be,
I'm willing to give it time.
It's going to be a mid card heel. And that's good for collision shows and Rampage where they need a body to fill in main event in certain matches. That's what he's there.
Well,
for.
And there's nothing wrong with that either. Like,
no.
You need a guy who can, like you say, be a mid-card heel, and he's like a good enough worker that he can have really good mid-card matches and be an ass, and I think it would work for him. I mean, could he do something main event? Yes, but I think he would be better in a group in that respect. I don't know if he can do it solo.
But as Casey alluded to, at the end of this match, we had Trent Beretta call, or, you know, like, he was beating down both Seidel brothers, and then Chuck came in to kind of run him off. And then as he was going up the ramp, the familiar music of Orange Cassidy came on, and you just saw the look on Trent's face like, son of a bitch. And Orange came out, and they kind of stood there for a minute and wondered if anything was going to happen. And it looked like he may have tried to take a shot until Shibata's music hit, and then he ran.
Smart man.
Yeah, I was going to be like, because the funny thing is we saw Orange get the knee. We've seen Chuck Taylor there kind of confronting Trent Beretta. We haven't seen Shibata as part of that group, and he is associated. And so Trent knows that, like, Shibata's got Orange's back right now, and Trent needed to GTFO.
Indeed.
So we then moved on to Orange Cassidy and Katsuyori Shibata taking on Shane Taylor Productions of Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty with the man from Witness Protection, Anthony Ogogo, on commentary.
Promotions. Shane Taylor Promotions.
Promotions. I'm sorry. Is it bad that for the longest time I had no clue that Anthony Ogogo was part of this faction, and so when he came out a couple, like 2 weeks ago, I went, oh shit, he's still hired?
Well, I don't think he was until he came out a couple of weeks ago. He was like, I think they had him as like the newest member of Shane Taylor Promotions. Oh, I'm like, yeah, they just brought him on. So for the longest time, it was just Shane Taylor and Moriarty. And then they added him just recently.
Yeah.
Gotcha. But this was all right. Okay. No offense. Shane Taylor does nothing for me. Mm-hmm. I watch Ring of Honor a bit before, but I was never like a big ROH person before it went under Tony. And I know that, you know, Shane Taylor's been part of that for a long time. And he had, of course, the history with Keith Lee there. But I mean, he's kind of like a big guy that can move. Not as big as Keith Lee, but still big. There was one spot that I do have to give Orange Cassidy credit for in this match. Hmm. And it's one of the things I've always thought about a certain move.
Hmm.
And that's when Lee Moriarty was trying to do the sunset flip on Orange Cassidy. And he did the kind of waving his arms. And then he just reaches down, takes Lee Moriarty's like hands off of his hips, and walks over and tags Shibata. It was just like, oh, bravo.
Yeah, that was super well done.
Because we've always seen that spot where like the guy is like flailing in air, and then finally like he'll reach down and punch, or he'll do the sit down or something. And I've always just been thinking like, why don't you just like step out of it, or why don't you like he did, just move the hands?
Yeah.
And it was like, it's one of those simple things, but it was like, he pulled it off really well, and it's like, okay, I'll give you your flowers, Orange Cassidy. Good job. Also, the other good thing that I saw was Shane Taylor was trying to pick up Orange Cassidy into a package pile driver, mm-hmm. and then Shibata just walks up behind him and applies a sleeper because his arms are full, and you just see Shane Taylor like, oh god, and just start to fall.
Yeah, they did a lot of like subtly smart things in this match.
Yeah, it was good. You got to feature Orange Cassidy and get, you know, his move set in. You got Shibata in to be able to do the kind of strikes against Shane Taylor, who's also a striker. So they were just beating the hell out of each other back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then yeah, Moriarty was there to provide some, you know, some of like the high flying with Cassidy. So it was a good kind of overall pairing in terms of their match.
It was a good showing. I think if you're gonna put that match on a pay-per-view, 0 Hour is the place to do it. Otherwise, you could have profiled that on any of their TV shows and it would have been good as well.
Yeah.
I thought it was properly placed and everybody had a good showing. Like you say, I have nothing against Shane Taylor. It doesn't really do anything for me either, but like he's talented, so I won't not watch him. It's just I can't get behind a lot of the story stuff he does, and it's nothing that he's done or anything. It's just one of those things. It's just
it's not for you.
Yeah,
just not
which is fine. It's pro wrestling. It's
that's why it's like a variety show. There's something for everybody, but not everything has to work for everybody.
Indeed. Yep. What else, Brent?
And then our last match of the 0 Hour was winner take all trios match. Featuring your AEW Trios champions, the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass, taking on Jay White and the Gun Club, the Bang Bang Gang, which are the ROH Trios champions. We had Max Caster come out and cut his usual rap, and then he went freestyle. He went a cappella with some lines that were interesting. It was a line. Yeah, it was kind of Cena Thuganomics a little bit with the innuendos and getting cut off at the very end by Anthony Bowen not wanting to deal with what was going to be said. we had the king of the pre-show, Jay White, as some people have deemed it, considering this is his second pre-show?
Something like that.
Or second 0 Hour. My biggest contention with this match, I know the man has had a 30-year career. Billy Gunn should not be no-selling Jay White. Now, if he wants to do it to his sons and they set up this, there was one spot where he no-sold like Colton Gunn's offense and it led to Colton kind of giving him a hug. And he kind of was like, okay, here, and then just popped him. That, fine. But when, like, Jay White is sitting there trying to give him chops and trying to deliver offense, and Billy Gunn looks like Sting, just no-selling the shit out of it. That does nothing for Jay White. That and the match he had 2 weeks ago completely devalues him in my mind.
I don't mind it as bad, because if you look at, like, I mean, I get that he's an older guy, but if you look at his stature and his size, and he basically towers over almost everybody else in that ring except one of his sons as far as height, but he's still, like, he's a big dude. I don't mind it to a certain degree.
But they did it a few times in this match, and it was just the kind of thing of, like, if he's that big and he's doing that, why isn't he main eventing?
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. If you're going to do it, it has to be consistent.
So there was that. There was a couple of there was back and forth in this match. The Guns kicked out of the mic drop, elbow drop. Did someone kick out of the Blade Runner? I think.
No, there
or
was.
Or the, I'm sorry, the 310 to Yuma. They kicked out,
yep,
of.
Someone kicked out of 310 to Yuma.
There was an attempt at a Blade Runner.
Someone kicked out of a Famous, or I can't remember who did it and who kicked out of it.
I know.
Colton
hit Billy with it, and Billy kicked out it too.
Yeah, that was the one.
No, and that's Billy Gunn. Billy Gunn's the one.
I mean, that was the one and only was also hit. And but I don't think anybody kicked out of the Blade Runner. There was, like, right at the end, it was an attempt to reverse to almost a Famesser, and then he immediately switched it into the Blade Runner onto Billy Gunn and won.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you kind of, and I guess maybe that's why I don't mind the no-sell so much, is that at the end of the day, Billy Gunn went down to one Blade Runner.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that. It's just, with him and with what happened later in the show, and you have people talk about, you know, oh, like, older talents should be putting over younger talent, and it's just like, well, I know that eventually Billy went down to the Blade Runner, but it's like I said, with the match 2 weeks ago where he spent 5 minutes just annihilating Jay White.
Yeah. 100%.
Annihilating him.
I'm with you, but.
And then this, it was just like, guys, Billy Gunn has been 30 years in the industry, and it's like, I know that, you know, sure, Flair and Funk have also, you know, been in for a long time, but they also, like, sold. And Billy was out there looking like a goddamn juggernaut at some points. But that's, like I said, that's me in this respect. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was 0 hour.
Mm-hmm.
We then start the show with what I would, which I would say is a very hot open for your Continental Crown Championship, Kazuchika Okada taking on the Bastard Pac.
Well, there's no more crown. It's just the Continental Championship, apparently.
Okay, the Continental Championship. My bad.
Because the crown is all three of them, which is... Anyway.
They split those up real quick.
They sure
well,
did.
Well, as soon as they knew that they could put a belt on Okada, they were like, yeah, fuck the Triple Crown.
Kind of interesting how they're just, you know, he was in the company, what, 3 weeks and had a title?
Oh, don't worry. Someone gets a title match their first match.
At least they've been in a company before. Anyway.
No, this person's brand new to the company and they get a title shot their first match.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but they're still a bit on TV was more the point.
Yeah.
Okada fought Danielson.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was fine. No, it's fine. The match was really, the match, him holding a title is not the problem. It's funny how it is. One, they call this the Workers' Championship now, but when Orange Cassidy had the international title, that was the Workers' title. I'm confused.
They're all workers.
I don't know.
No, one is like a worker's belt, and one is like a workhorse belt.
Mm.
So one is a belt for, like, working people, and the other one is for doing the work. Let's go with that.
Good job, Keish. Way to sell it.
That's an explanation. That was an...
Words were formed into sentences.
They were. One thing that they mentioned, like, Excalibur was mentioned on commentary, like, the title can be, you know, retained by a countout, the championship can. It's like, making it like, this is a new thing. Like, but all the titles can remain via countout.
But, Rock, remember, for Continental Championship rules, there are specialty things, such as no interference, no one allowed at ringside, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, but the count-out thing was, it's always been a thing in wrestling. But anyway, I had a problem with Excalibur on the show. He just, things he said.
we'll talk about announcers later.
Things he said throughout the night. Anyway, thoughts on this match?
I thought it was good.
I thought it was a really good bout between them. This is one of those things where I have been hesitant about Okada as a heel because it seems like the fans don't want him to be.
No, because they were chanting his name to start the match.
Well, and no offense, they haven't really done anything to make him heel aside from put him with the Young Bucks.
Yeah.
There's not really anything he's done that projects or screams, you know, I am a heel. Now, the one thing he did during this show that kind of played into that, which we alluded to at the in the Zero Hour, which was great, because the big thing for Okada is the Rainmaker Zoom. It's the special camera shot that they always get. And he's lining up to get ready for it, and then he just flips the camera off. And that's one of those where I was like, that's a heel move. But the problem was the fans cheered.
Wow, I mean, they can only do so much to control the fan. Yeah, they booed a little bit because, like, they're expecting that Rainmaker, whether they're there or on TV, you expect that pose. And when I watched him do it, I was like, oh my God, that's awesome. But I'm also like, I get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he did a couple other things in the match a little bit. And then to like kind of show people like, oh, I'm doing heelish stuff. Like he did some stuff. I think he like grabbed the ref for something once, and just the kind of way he like carried himself after the match was very like heel tendency. So I think like this was kind of the match for him where he was kind of doing a lot more to be like lean more into that heel sort of tendency, where a lot of the stuff leading up to this where he's like wrestling kind of jobber guys and like acting like just kind of like brushing them off like they're nothing was a little bit heelish, but this kind of was the thing that like really leaned into it. So it's going in the right direction at least. And it might just take a little bit of time for him to get over more as a heel due to the fact that, you know, he can't just come out and cut like a perfect in English promo telling the fans that they suck and stuff.
We'll see.
I talked to Rock about this match, and there's one thing that specifically about Okada, or at least at the end of this match, I can't get behind the Rainmaker.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit too. It's for me, like, as someone who's watched a lot of Okada matches over the last few years, it is, the move is very touch and go depending on how
the opponent sells it.
Yeah, so like the one that he did to Pac last night was not like one of his better ones, because when Okada hits like a really, really good Rainmaker, you watch him throw the guy out and he pulls the dude in and just crushes them. The one that he did to Pac, he kind of only was able to just step in, and Pac didn't really step back into it as much as he just kind of stood there and got hit with it. So then suddenly it doesn't look as good as I've seen in the past. Like there have been ones that he's hit with people when they both kind of walk in and meet in the middle. It's very much like, it looks like when two guys are running and hit a double clothesline on each other, except one person is just like hammering through the other dude and the other guy is like walking into it and dying. This just wasn't one of his better ones.
I think part of it is the fact that there's the ripcord element to it, and that leads to like, you have to like wheel them out and then try and pull them back in for the move. I thought the same thing when Seth had the ripcord knee very briefly as his finish. It takes the right sell, and like you said, it takes you really kind of pulling him in for it. Whereas I've seen clotheslines delivered by other people where it's like, you can see a clothesline that separates someone from their soul.
Yeah.
And it feels like the ripcord element of it kind of takes some of that away, because it's reliant on, all right, so you're here, I got to spin you out and then try and pull you, and hopefully you can get enough into it that it looks impactful.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it could just be like you talked about. We haven't seen someone that can properly kind of take or sell that. And once that happens, I might be like, ooh, that looked really, you know, really bad. But for this, it just kind of seemed like, it seemed like the V-trigger for Kenny Omega, where it's like he hits it and you go, okay, that was a move. I don't believe it's going to put someone down for three, but it's a move.
Yeah. I mean, I thought like the ones that he delivered to Bryan Danielson in their last match, I thought those ones looked a lot crisper.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he's got a couple of other moves that he uses as well, and he's got a submission, and maybe he wants to start using those. But I always like the Rainmakers that always look the best to me are the ones where like his opponent has been so beaten down and he can like, he's basically just like picking up a limp body, because then you know for a fact that he's like, that he's going to hit that clothesline and this person isn't going to do anything about it. Those are usually the ones that look way more definitive, because the person has already been basically beaten down and has nothing left to give.
Yeah, it looks like it's an actual finish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This was good. This was a really good match, though.
Overall, this was a good defense for Okada. Pac worked well in there. I liked the teases of the Black Arrow or Red Arrow or whatever it's called now. And like trying to hit it, but not quite getting there. And then I kind of like Pac at the end of the match, just frustrated.
Should be.
Yeah.
Should be frustrated.
Yeah.
But Okada's still Continental Champion. Up next, Trios Action, House of Black, taking on three different champions. Adam Copeland, a.k.a. the TNT Champion, and he kicks in the New Japan Strong...
Correct.
...champion. And Mark Briscoe is the ROH World Champion.
So we had two-thirds of the Continental Crown Championship there.
This match was alright. Them holding off Malakai and Adam Copeland to not really touch to save it for a match coming up. Smart, I say.
Yeah.
Malakai
and how they ended the match to kind of feed into that also.
Yeah.
Smart.
That was the right outcome too.
Yeah.
I know some people are like, well, you just beat three champions on your pay-per-view. Yes, but you're setting up a future title match.
Well,
it made sense.
They also beat him shady. So,
yeah, there was an out there.
And I would argue the fact of you have an established trio, the House of Black. They all fight together. They're the former trio's champion, taking on three guys who happened to come together and didn't really have, you know, a unified front. They just, you know, all kind of had a little bit of a beef with the House of Black. In that respect, I would think, yeah, the House of Black has an advantage, and they should win. And ultimately, they did. This is where I think commentary did a good job in saying the fact that Malakai Black kind of outsmarted the ultimate opportunist in Adam Copeland. Because Copeland went for the spear, and Malakai hit him with the mist, and then... is it the end or the Black Mass?
Whatever it's called. We all know what it is.
He hit the roundhouse on him and knocked him into next Tuesday.
His super pinpoint accurate spinning kick.
God. I wish I had like even half of that ability to do that.
And like, just to put that over, like the consistency of how no matter, like, even if he's like a bit too close, a bit too far, moving fast, moving slow, taking his time, like I would say like 99% of the time hits the guy right on the mark perfectly. It is insane how well he executes that kick, to the point where like I don't think you can argue against him having that as a finishing move. Yes, lots of people kick other people in the face, but he does it so consistently every single time, no matter what. Like you have to like you gotta give it to him as a finisher.
Well, and he makes it look devastating no matter what, because like you said, the way that they frame it and the way that he can deliver it, it just boom hits, and all of a sudden like you see the eyes roll back in the guy's head and it's just like out, and it's like, yeah, that's how it should be.
Yeah,
that is exactly how a finish should hit. And as you said, he pinpoints it every damn time and makes it look beautiful.
There was one comment though that was made by commentary where it's like Edge was being outsmarted or something, and it was before the miss part, but it's like, we just watched for 3 months of Christian outsmarting Edge.
look, they've known each other forever, okay? That's different. They're brothers in storyline and kind of in person.
I'm just saying, Christian's been outsmarting him for months now.
Yeah, but Christian's gone. I mean, we haven't seen him. He's out. He's done.
Yeah.
There's also, you know, a veil of like, you know, brotherly love there that could cloud Edge's or Adam Copeland's judgment when it comes to Christian, regardless of how much of a dickwad Christian is. it's very much that like nobody gets to beat up my brother except for me.
I get dibs.
I, I can terrorize him until the sun goes down. But if someone else touches him, so there's like, yeah, it's just there's a little bit of cloud of judgment because they have such a long and storied history.
Casey and I are just coming up with these narratives on the fly. I love it.
Anyway, House of Black got the win. We'll probably see Copeland and Malachi shortly on the TV.
I love the fact we're actually getting a Malachi Black singles match for once.
And probably for a title.
Yes!
And maybe he'll get the title. I think he should.
Maybe Tony is trying to keep someone around.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Up next, it was house rules for the AEW TBS Championship. Julia Hart defending against Willow Nightingale. This match started midway through. That's what it felt like, at least. It felt like we saw like the match from like the middle to the end. There was no real beginning, it felt like. At least to me. I feel like we rushed a lot.
This match was a little bit fast, and I wonder if some of that relates to Julia's overall health. Because for a while, she didn't compete. She was always kind of lurking, but she was never really physical for a while. And it wasn't until recently she's kind of gotten back into the ring.
And then she got banged up again.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. Yeah, it had a lot to do with that. I don't know. I was looking forward to this match, actually, like seeing a full-blown match. But if you look at the times on everything that happened on the show, this was a third of everything that was on the main show. If not, you know, everything averaged around 18 minutes, 20 minutes. This had six. So that's why I felt like
it was... I didn't realize it was that short.
Yeah, it was 6 minutes. That's why when I watched it, I was like, we're already in the middle of like fire back up sequences and the minute in. It's like, because the longest match on the show was, of course, Ospreay and Danielson, but everything else averaged around 18 to 20 minutes. So because of her health, it makes sense you take the belt off her. Hopefully she can heal up.
Yeah,
Willow's your new champion, and it sets up the rematch that we all saw was coming, but I thought... The CEO is a babyface. Willow is the ultimate babyface. So, I don't know what you do here.
You turn Mercedes heel. She's a natural heel, especially in a CEO character.
Yeah.
It's starting to trend that way, I think, a little bit with the way that she's talked. Because, I mean, you can only talk about, you know, the spirit of Eddie for so long before you actually have to, like, get into a character.
She can lean heel, yes. Will she be an actual heel by with the crowd?
Oh,
go back to Okada
that's
argument.
That's the biggest problem is, aside from one person I could name by name, or there's one person I can definitely name as a heel right now, and the fans act as such, but not for a good reason. But everyone else, it seems like being a heel, like the fans want to cheer because it's the cool thing to do, is like cheer the heel, even for like the Young Bucks. So I kind of agree with that of like you'll want to have Sasha be a heel, but in my opinion, if you do that, then you have to remove the CEO chant from her intro, because you don't want the fans to start chanting CEO when they're supposed to boo her.
The CEO did show up after this match and had a stare down with Willow. I don't know what else to add to that. Oh, I will say Chris Statlander and Stokely gave the people what they wanted. And Stokely gave the people what they wanted.
Yeah, they got the hug spot.
they did the hug spot.
Although, someone brought up a good point, and they were like, Statlander going for that hug. Don't know if that's a good move right now. Waiting for that flying knee to come out of nowhere.
The Stokely Hathaway flying knee?
Not quite, but that would be really funny to watch Stokely deliver it. I don't know if Stokely can get up that high.
There's only one way to find out.
Oh, true.
Your international championship was on the line. Roderick Strong and Kyle O'Reilly. It was fine.
They beat the piss out of each other.
They did.
They did, and I liked the fact of Strong working Kyle's back because that, of course, his back and neck, because that's kind of the storyline for Kyle right now.
Yeah.
But
especially the neck part.
But it's, I think the problem with this match was the fact of there. Even though there was a little bit of storyline to it, it didn't feel like there was a lot of build for this.
No, I was just about to say, I thought they could have taken a little bit longer to build it, and they sort of just, I don't know, kind of fell into it really quick.
The problem is, there was no reason for Roderick to turn on Kyle.
Yeah, not yet.
No, because the whole thing is you'd been trying to recruit him. You've been trying to recruit him. And then just all of a sudden out of nowhere, bam, you hit him. And I mean, I guess the reason's because, oh, he's getting the international title shot, but it still feels just completely out of left field of like, but this is your boy and you've been trying to bring him in. And all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, bam, you hit him and I'm going to try and end your career.
Yeah. I think that would have been better if they kind of did like a full attack after this match and kind of like, listen, you've been doing great since you got back. I respect the fact that you're trying to do it on your own and you earned yourself a title shot on your own. I respect that. Let's have a good match. Even though Roderick Strong is the heel and he's with the Undisputed Kingdom and all that other stuff, but because they have such a history and they're such good friends, you can kind of like forego that and have like a really good match. Maybe have him do a couple of heelish things that, you know, make it, he can kind of work. I mean, he can still work the back because it's kind of his MO. He can work the neck a little bit, but not like super hardcore. And then after the match, you could have him be like, good job, you tried, yada, 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 then attack him.
Yeah, it's attack him, and it's just, you thought you could come for this? No.
Yeah.
That would put much more heat on it. This just felt like we really want to have a match between these two guys, and we're going to, for lack of a better term, we're going to shoehorn a build into this as quick as we can. And it was just like, okay. Because, I mean, basically the build was, we're going to show you old ROH and, like, PWG clips to show these guys have fought before. All right. Sweet. So, Rock, you thought this was just fine?
It was just fine. I couldn't get behind it. Like you guys mentioned, the story just didn't hook into the match.
And also, I think it's the fact that, like, we haven't really gotten like, a lot of Kyle O'Reilly in AEW. Like, he had Red Dragon with Bobby Fish, but they really didn't do they were there for as a tag team for a bit, but you never really got him on the mic much.
Well, and got injured real quick, too.
Right, and then he gets injured, and it's like, when he comes back, he's giving, I mean, for lack of a better term, these very generic, boy, I'm really glad to be back, and I'm going to try and make the most of my opportunity, and I'm going to do it alone. Mm-hmm. Promo. We're not learning anything about him. And on the other side, I understand Roderick Strong, but to me, he's very much a one-note player because all he's doing is his whole, you know, like, part of the Undisputed Kingdom, and his big catchphrase is screaming whatever, you know, some person's name.
Yeah.
It's like, there's nothing to Roderick Strong, and I think that was also part of the problem in NXT when he was there. Like, Roderick Strong's entire persona was, he's part of the Undisputed Era. Mm-hmm. He could deliver backbreakers like nobody's business, but he was part of the Undisputed Era. And when that broke up, he had nothing to do, so they created the Diamond Mine for him, but even that, like, he didn't have a personality. And so I think it's hard when you have these two guys in a match like that, where it's like, I know nothing about these two. Sure, it's going to probably be a good match, but that's all it's going to be.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was fine. The half-assed Wardlow, oh yeah, I'm going to get in the ring and interfere.
Oh God, Wardlow.
And then we're going to have the Adam Cole come back. He gets out of his wheelchair because the internet said he couldn't walk, so we're going to have him walk. So he shows healthy and gives a look. And
hate to say this.
Your future, you look. Tease, go ahead.
I want nothing to do with an Adam Cole Wardlow feud right now.
But you're gonna get it.
You don't want to see. You don't want to see Wardlow run through the Undisputed Kingdom.
No. Because how many times have we seen Wardlow do something and then it get either cut out from under him, or it's like, okay, great, you blow through the Undisputed Kingdom. What next?
Yeah.
I never want to say this, but I, honest to God, I think the best thing for Wardlow is to get out of the company. He needs to go to somewhere like a TNA or a WWE, and I mean truly get a fresh start. Because I feel like in AEW, there's just nothing there. Because they don't know what to do with him.
His character comes off disinterested, which makes you as the you know, viewer seem like, oh, he's not really giving it his full effort, and he's just running through the motions. And he's been running through the motions for 2 years now.
Look, his biggest gimmick right now is, what, posing in the Titantron. Like, halfway through the match, he'll look up on the big screen, and he'll just start, like, posing. What the fuck is that?
Vanity.
They had something with him, and we've talked about it for 2 years now. every time we do the show, and Wardlow has something on it. It's like, remember when he beat MJF cleanly? And
oh, was he ran through MJF.
And then MJF disappeared. MJF came out on TV and just blew the angle to shit and said fuck you to everybody and left for 3 months. And then Wardlow was like, well, lost his heat and or whatever. And kind of just ran through the motions, TNT champion, but never kind of won a world title because it was promised to other people. He was a Ryback. He was a Goldberg. He needed to win something. Goldberg got the win, and Goldberg became a star. Ryback didn't get the win over Punk and became just, well, Ryback. When you have the monster babyface running through people, he needs to finish the job. He never finished the job. And for two years, he's been stagnant of trying to finish the job and never got another opportunity to do so. He's cut promo saying, you know, I did this and this and this, but it led to nowhere. It never gave you the big moment because the TNT championship, when he's held it, hasn't felt like a big deal.
Well, I was going to say, number one, Powerhouse Hobbs is exactly in the same boat.
Yeah.
And they battled each other. So if that tells you something, but yeah.
I would say Powerhouse Hobbs is in a better spot because at least what his role is his role. You know what it is. Like, there was potential with Wardlow, and they're blowing it. And this next run of, we're going to break him out of whatever this is. He's got to win a world title within 3 months of whatever this happens. Because if he doesn't, he's just going to be a guy again and be back in the same spot 6 months later of just running his circles. But yeah, a fresh start would be good for him. But if they keep him, he's got to do it. They got to be like, here's the ball, run with it and see what you got. Him standing around in a corner is not doing that.
You want to know what proof would be of a fresh start can do someone wonders? Drew McIntyre.
Mm.
He floundered in WWE for so long being, you know, the three-man band and everything. Then it was like, all right, you know what? We're going to cut you loose. Go do what you need to do. Went to TNA, became a world champion. Went, you know, into England and Scotland, became a, you know, IWP, or was it the ICW?
Something like that, yeah.
With, like, Grado and all them. Went over, world champion, like, ran through that company. You know, WCPW, same thing. And then the time came, and he came back to NXT, and when he came back, he looked like a world buster. And he's been on trajectory ever since, where now, he's, quote-unquote, the hot free agent, possibly, that's going to be out there if he doesn't re-sign with WWE. Wardlow could do the same thing.
So, we'll see. Because now we have more opinions about something else.
Oh, dear God.
It is time for the FTW rules match for the FTW championship. Hook the fans against Chris Jericho. Okay, before I let Brent go and Casey. So, Tony Schiavone is trying to make a point during Jericho's entrance. And he's making this point. I don't even remember what the point was. And then Hook's music hits, and then there's the signal, and he has to stop whatever point he's making to scream about the signal, and then goes back to his point. Finish your making your fucking point, and no one needs to know about the signal. Who gives a shit? It's there. We all see it. We all have eyes. It's fine. You don't have to scream. I know you lost Sting. I know. It's sad. You lost it. You lost being able to scream about Sting. Now you have Hook's signal. Just let the act. You don't have to wedge your shit in. Tell your point. All right, I'm good. Brent, tell me about this match and why you love Chris Jericho.
Oh, dear God, the absolute black void of Chris Jericho has enveloped Hook again. So remember what I talked about earlier when it comes to a veteran and, like, oh, they should be used to put the young talent over and, like, they serve a purpose. Chris Jericho, Hulk Hogan, Hook. He fucking Hulk Hogan, Hook. Dear God. Okay, explain to me how we went from Hook eviscerating Chris Jericho 3 weeks ago on Dynamite for everyone to see. Just beat him from pillar to post, dropped him with a suplex onto his freaking head to what we got on last night.
Because the first time they wrestled, Jericho was not ready for Hook, and the second time they wrestled, he was. That's the only thing I can justify it with.
Now, Casey, did the right person win this match?
I'm going to say it's going to depend on what they do with it next.
I mean, depending on what you see on the internet, who knows if there's going to be a next with these two.
Oh?
Apparently, Hook wants to test the free agent waters and may end up in a certain black and gold brand.
I mean, I heard about that. I just didn't think that it was going to be this soon.
I didn't think it was this soon. I thought that's... We're down the road on that.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, when people saw this, the first reaction was, well, I guess he's going. But Chris Jericho is that one person that I talked about earlier that is an absolute heel in AEW.
Yeah.
But the reason he is not for their making.
But his character's not. He's like kind of a heel, but he's not.
It's going to transition into more of a heel. I think they're going to turn into this skid.
Yeah.
But ultimately, like, Jericho was trying to be a face, and things happened, I'll say, outside of the ring that precipitated the fans to completely turn on him. Mm-hmm. And now Chris Jericho has absolute go-away heat.
He does, but this match with him saying, sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, at the end, that's not full heel stuff. That's a sympathetic babyface, I'm sorry I had to do this. This is a veteran, like, I'm like, I'm sorry I had to teach a kid. It just, it wasn't full heel. The crowd's making him more of a heel with all their chants, but the character is kind of in between.
Yeah, that was the thing. When you had the fans chanting, please retire, go away, and, well, there was one other chant, I thought.
I want to say it was, let me go back and look.
I don't remember the other chant, but there was probably a third.
I think it was like, go home, Jericho.
Yeah, go home, Jericho. Like, go away and please retire. That's not good.
Especially when they're
fan base is chanting that.
Especially when they're not fully like playing into it, and that's kind of where they are. But
yeah,
they're not.
I mean, I heard that he trademarked
Vortex.
The learning tree.
I heard he's trying to trademark the Jericho Vortex.
Yeah, he is.
So
that's why every time you've mentioned, like, that was one of the other one he was doing. Yeah, they're leaning into that skid, but
they're getting there. But I mean, I don't know if it's the best idea, but at least they're aware of the fact that they want him to go away.
They're aware. Well, he's aware because he's the one trademarking it, not the company. It's not even good heat.
No. Well, and the problem is like, where do you go with Jericho? Because, I mean, you could still kind of do the Hook thing if you want, but okay, he has the FTW belt. Super, you have the non-recognized title. Is he going to start calling himself the Nueve now because he considers it a world championship?
Is his 24th title, he's a different title he's held or something?
Like, you can't make him a manager. We've heard how awful he is on commentary.
He's going to
continue. His matches are not going that great.
He's going to be around until Tony feels like he's had enough, and with the way Tony books, he's going to be around a while because Tony doesn't care. He's to him, he's Chris Jericho. The heat is the heat, the crowd is the crowd. You're still going to tell their stories the way they are, and it's unfortunate because we sat here 6 weeks ago going, we hope we see more from Hook. We want to see Hook do things. And then the first chance they get on pay-per-view with him in a big profile, high-profile match, they beat him soundly. Yes, he kicked out of Jericho's finish twice.
I mean, it did take like a straight shot to the head with a baseball bat.
It did, but you still beat him.
Yeah, and...
And it goes back to, I'll use the Goldberg again. It's the taser. It's them. It's you killed the aura of Hook.
Yeah,
because he finally got a big match on prime pay per view and lost. Recognized championship or not, he lost. If he doesn't get his heat back and his win back, and this favors,
in a big way,
in a big spot, double or nothing stipulation match, book it that way. Him getting the win back on television is not going to matter because no one remembers matches on television at all at the end of the day. Pay-per-view was where it matters.
I wonder if something, and I mean, I know we just kind of had this, the pay-per-view before, but I wonder if something along the lines of like an I Quit match where he has to make Jericho say those words.
Mm.
But the problem is you just had that with Copeland and Cage.
Yeah.
Do Last Man Standing.
But you also had that with Swerve and Page not too long ago.
Then you're screwed.
But, you know, it's like you do have to have this big kind of blow off between the two, because Hook just beating Jericho in a straight up match isn't going to do it.
Nope. It has to be impactful. And because let's talk about it. When Hook beat Jericho, Jericho fucking no-sold it on television. And that's where the problem started. He brushed it off in a promo 10 minutes later. He didn't give any
other.
He didn't help. He's not helping this kid. And that's the problem. If you're going to make someone, make him. Put him over. Put over the beating you took.
But that's been the MO of Chris Jericho for the longest time. We've talked about that. You know, the Orange Cassidy feud with Chris Jericho. Did that help Cassidy? No. In the end, it's like Cassidy escaped, you know, the black hole of Jericho. It took him a while to get up to, like, a good status again. It took, essentially, the runs with the international title to really kind of cement him. You know, okay, yeah, he's okay. He's in a good spot. But, like, Chris Jericho versus the Don Callis family did nothing for any of the members of the Callis family. Who did Jericho face before that he was in a forever feud with?
He had Adam Cole that didn't do much.
Adam Cole with the Inner Circle. You had the Inner Circle take on the Elite in the Blood and Guts. That didn't really do anything.
He's failed attempt at trying to make Sammy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Sammy's hurt himself too.
Sammy, I don't know if he's redeemable right now. Although it does help that at least one of the Hardys is not in AEW anymore.
Yeah.
And at least you know Sammy disappeared for a while.
Not on purpose. Not for his want to.
regardless, like Jericho could use a big multi-date few months music tour where he isn't on TV for a while because he can't leave his band for long enough.
No, he makes sure his Wednesdays are free to do TV.
I know, but he could use it.
No, he could use it. He could use 3 months away.
Send him across the pond.
Too many big shows. They have pay-per-views to fill now. Can't. Anyway, I think we spent enough on the Vortex. We've been sucked into it long enough. Let's talk about something that was good. It was Toni Storm, Thunder Rosa for the Women's World Title. One thing was Thunder Rosa comes out with without her makeup on. You just see her. You see the makeup all over her eyes. Wasn't her face painted?
She had her eyeshadow. That was all.
Just no face paint.
No face paint. But they said makeup and like.
And then Toni comes out caked with the, you know, black and white or black and white movie like extra makeup.
Oh,
this was good. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, it was two good performers.
Right outcome. Toni winning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Deonna got involved.
So you set up. You're gonna set up Deonna Thunder at some point.
Toni in the post mat or in the post pay per view scrum was a completely different story.
She took shots back. It's whatever.
And then walked out when they brought up the fact that Mariah May is the number one contender right now, according to rankings.
That's funny.
Wait, rankings matter?
I don't know. Mercedes gets a title shot in her first match.
So did Kyle, and so did Okada.
No, Kyle had a couple of matches.
Okada got two matches. Really strong rating system.
I mean, you could at least chalk up Okada's to like being buddy buddies with the EVPs and them kind of strong them in there.
Yeah, I get it.
At least that one you can justify. Mercedes, I suppose you could say that she bought her title shot.
It was in her contract, you know, that, you know, when she signed that she gets a title, which if you're a member of the AEW women's division, you're kind of sitting there going, what the fuck?
Yeah.
We have to battle every week and this bitch gets to walk right in and get a title shot. Excuse me.
And TV time.
Yeah. And TV time. But overall, you know, Thunder Rosa, Storm, good match. You made Thunder Rosa look a bit strong with the kick out of the Storm Zero initially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then the clam slam that Toni delivered to her put her down.
It worked. It works.
You don't see it very often in a women's match, so.
No, but she delivered it with force and vigor.
Boy, did she.
She sure did. Also, you mentioned Mariah May is the number one contender according to the rankings, even though she lost to Deanna recently. So, makes sense. Totally logical. Mm-hmm. I think we need new rankings. I think they should update them.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know the last time they released rankings. It's been a couple of weeks.
It's probably been a month. They should do it after every pay-per-view before give new rankings or something. I don't know. Or every TV, every week on, TV week, if you're going to actually use it. Or it's just a plot point.
Yeah.
Which is fine if it's a plot point. Just make it clear that rankings, they're the number one contender because they're here. Just...
Mm-hmm.
Don't put out there like rankings matter and then give title shots at will or have the one thing I absolutely hate about. We have rankings, but we're still going to have eliminator matches. Why do you have the rankings then if you could just be like, well, we're going to have you fight him and if he wins, then he gets a title shot.
What they should do is each title should have their own ranking.
Yeah.
Not a men's division title ranking and a women's title ranking because you have world TNT, Continental, International, 4 singles for men, 2 for women. Each should have its own division of rankings. That way you could truly set up contenders and truly have rankings matter. And eliminator matches would then count where, they beat the champion, now they're in the rankings. So now they're part of that group, and then they would have to beat whoever's in that top number one to jump up to number one. So it's an eliminator match to put them in a contention for the title, not a title shot. And that's how the ranking should work.
So instead of the eliminator being for a title shot, it should be to enter consideration.
Put you on
for
the board
that
on
that grouping.
Put you on the board in that ranking system. Yeah.
Yeah, I could support that.
That's how ranking should work because I think that's how it works in UFC, where rankings for every single championship. That's the way boxing worked, where you have different rankings for every single title. A men's
every
division,
weight class. Yeah.
Yeah, weight class. Yeah. Has a division. So if you're going with rankings, the women's world title should have its own system. So should TBS because you're confusing your audience by, hey, this is number one and number two. And well, they're fighting for which title? It's like you could pick and choose when you're number one. That makes no sense. Every title should have its own top five.
Is it also weird that Mercedes is going for the TBS title first off?
It's fine because you want to keep them, Tony and her, apart for a while.
Yeah.
Because you just brought Deanna in and just did the same story of coming right in getting the title shot. Having Mercedes come in and do the same story for the same belt.
Yeah.
Not right. And because you're tying it back now to Willow, the history, it makes more sense. Should Willow have had the belt first before they did the whole she gets title match? Yes, because they would have made more logical sense that she's coming after Willow and the TBS title just happened to be there.
Mm-hmm.
They were a plot point too early on bringing her in for it to make sense for why she's going after the TBS title. Because Willow Mercedes is the match because that's where the history is because of the injury, which is why she has not wrestled in a year. It's why she's not cleared yet to wrestle, which is why she's not been on TV wrestling. She'll be cleared next month, hopefully. If she isn't, then, well, they're screwed.
Oh, there's a setback. Shit!
Anyway.
Now comes the match Rock was talking about.
The greatest wrestling match to ever exist in all mankind, time, space, continuum, and on planet Mars and Earth and Jupiter and all the worlds and planets. The global greatest match ever. Will Ospreay, Bryan Danielson.
Is really that good. What the internet is calling it?
They're calling it the greatest match on American soil.
Mm.
Yeah, this blows away everything. This blows away Savage and Steamboat and...
Shawn and Taker and all these great big matches. This
Omega Okada here, Omega and Ospreay here. Yeah, people were saying, like, immediately following this match, this was the greatest match I've ever seen. Was it good? Yes. But at the same time, do I think there was some hyperbole involved? Yes. I think if we watch this and let some time pass, this will sink in a little more like where it actually would fit.
Yeah, I mean, the hype and how they kind of got the crowd, like you can see why people are so invested in it because the match was good. The live response behind it was good.
They got a little, they got, the crowd got a little annoying.
Well, yeah.
There was one chant. I forget what it was, but it just got on my nerves a little bit. I was like, we're not worthy. No, that's not a chant you should be chanting. That just sounded stupid. And that chant was that bothered me. That got me annoyed with the crowd.
That's fair. But like,
But having a loud crowd is great, and that builds to the environment. They can chant whatever they want. I can just also say I don't think that chant is smart. But it was a really good wrestling match.
Yeah, it was.
Like, I'm not taking away from it. I just calling it the greatest in a history of, like, when you saw Savage and
Steamboat,
you didn't say, that's the greatest match I've ever seen. It was a really good match, but history told you it was one of the greatest matches ever. Shawn and Taker at that moment, was that the greatest match I've ever seen at that point? I wasn't calling it that, but over time, it's up there because history tells the story. You can't claim it as like, this is the greatest thing on American soil and be like, sure, maybe, but history tell the story.
Yeah, I would give it strong contender for like match of the year.
Yes.
Because absolutely it should be in the conversation of match of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great match. But like of all time, when you look at how long wrestling has been around, it's too soon.
Yes. And that, like, I didn't see this live. I watched it today. But everything I saw as the outcome happened, like, greatest, 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 greatest. I feel like it's just a lot of, like, clickbait. And I was worried about watching it because it's like, is it going to live up to this really high build-up expectation of a greatest match ever? It wasn't. Mm-hmm. It didn't live up to that billing. It was really good. The injury angle at the end kind of, to me, brought it down a little bit because you didn't need the angle of the injury angle for this match. I know it's a way to save Brian and do some talk, whatever, but it didn't need it. Clear, like, the moment should have happened, he should have just taken the loss. Without grabbing shoulders, whatever. He should have just been knocked out from the finishing spot. Because he landed clean, and it's like, I watched it, and like, he landed clean, and then 2 seconds later, he starts grabbing. It's like, well, I saw you take the move. You look perfectly fine taking the move. And then selling it, which is, whatever, that's the story you're telling, he was telling. But it's like, it didn't need it. I thought that took away from it and took it down to half a peg for me in terms of the overall historical aspect of the match. But that's my opinion. I don't know what you guys thought about the injury angle.
I don't think it took away as much as for me as it might have for you. Like, I mean, he landed pretty high. It was a clean landing, but like it's a like that specific Tiger Driver and probably almost every other Tiger Driver in existence, like looks really, really like it's like 1 inch higher and it could do a lot of damage. So like, and I mean, you could justify it as like, oh, maybe it was a stinger that took him out. Or if you want to like really, really deep dive into it, you could go as far back as when like Tyson Kidd took a muscle buster from Samoa Joe. It looked like a regular muscle buster, but it like broke his C1 vertebrae. So
and then using the post-show press conference, he's now retiring in the move because it injured Brian. And then what, TK No sold it, Brent, or something?
Where yeah.
He's going to be fine. The impression was kind of like, oh, you show concern, but Tony's like, yeah, it's fine. He'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't know about retiring the move. I think maybe like if he said maybe something more along the lines of like, because like you could, it's not like he intentionally dropped him on his neck.
No.
So if it was more of like a intentional, like I'm going to try and like kill him with this move, then maybe it would be better to be like Tony being like, we're going to retire that move. I get the sentiment of him feeling bad. And maybe it's like, maybe instead of saying just retiring altogether, he could have said something along the lines of, I think I might want to revisit how often I use that because of what happened here and I feel bad, but like just flat out saying, well, I'm never going to do it again.
Well,
like accidents happen.
If you wanted to do something with it, and it's like, I understand him going onto the press conference and saying something along the lines of like, oh, I'm going to retire this move. if you really want to do something with it, then the next match that Ospreay has, have him try to hook it in and then just like stop for a second and it's like, no.
Yeah.
There's a different way, because now you can play out the story on TV like, oh, that's the move he hurt Brian, you know, like Brian was laying with after the match, and you can draw that out instead of turning it into, like Rock said, this press conference bit of, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to stop using this move.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you want to go with that angle, right, and they actually sell it on television, then it works. But mm-hmm. if they just stop using the move and they don't really sell it, then and Brian's back in 2 weeks, he's fine. It was just an excuse to give Brian an out. But I'll say this. If he fully does retire the move and brings it back, that's when you turn him heel.
Yeah.
That's the heel move.
He breaks it out, drops someone with it, and has, like, the smile.
Yeah.
I mean,
That's it. That's the heel move you would do. Go ahead.
Yeah. And you could also go the other way with being how over he is with the crowd of like having him in a match with the Don Callis family and having Callis be like, do the Tiger Driver, and him being like, no. And because of that, that's the reason where the rest of the Don Callis family turns on Ospreay, because you don't have that killer instinct like I want in this family. You're out. Boom. So, yeah. I mean, if we're feeding into that narrative, okay, I can see that working.
If they play up to it, if they play the story, yes. If they just ignore it in a week, it wasn't worth it.
Hopefully there's some payoff.
I was going to say, in terms of the Brian injury thing, this is the second time he's pulled it out. Because I want to see, what was the other match where, was it MJF?
Probably.
Where he like, had the, quote, concussion-style symptoms where he's, like, on the mat kind of tremoring.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all like, oh, that's not a good sign. And then it came out later like, no, it was all scripted. And I remember the fans were just like, that's not what you do. Like, you don't fake concussion symptoms, especially for someone like him who had a career ended for a while because of head and neck stuff. And within a year, we've kind of seen this again. And it's just like, Brian, don't rely on this. Don't do this.
Especially because it's on your way out. As a full-time performer.
Yeah.
So we'll see. All right. Ladder match for the vacant AEW World Tag Team titles, the Young Bucks, FTR. It was fine.
Yep.
They did stuff.
Yep. Nothing super dangerous. Like, super dangerous.
Dax gigged himself.
One he did. There were, like, I don't know which Jackson it was. I don't remember who it was. But one of them was holding it. And the other was smacking it with the ladder with a chair.
Oh, yeah.
And him, he's... like his fingers, you could tell, are like rattling every time the ladder smacked. Wasn't probably the best idea. I'm just gonna say it probably was not the smartest. But they probably regretted that the concept of doing that spot. Afterwards.
On the plus side, he like sold his hands every time they hit him.
Yeah.
Shit. And then him like be like, no, we have to do this, and he grabs it again. Bang. Ah. Why don't I learn? What is my problem? Oh, I need to grab the ladder again.
Probably, but when he probably went back to it, it was like, maybe it probably was not the smartest idea I ever thought of.
I think FTR, the spot looked good. I think this morning they kind of regretted the super power and glory that they pulled off.
Yeah.
I think it was Cash Wheeler who came off the ladder with the splash.
Yep.
And ended up on his knees.
Yeah. Well,
did you saw him hit it and then he rolls over and he just grabs both his knees like, oh shit.
I think all four of these gentlemen are regretting some of the decisions that they made yesterday.
Dude, when Cash did the suicide, like he hit the one move and then he immediately goes like off the ropes to suicide dive and went straight into the table.
Oh.
Like, kudos for full speed, but Jesus, when he hit.
Yeah.
Also, my apologies to the Young Buck who took the spot over the... I think he took the clothesline over the top rope, but hit the ladder on the apron on the way down. Because there was the one ladder that was sitting like right there on the apron, and when he went over the top, you see his legs go over, and then you hear, smack!
Oh.
As he hit the ladder, and you just see him like, oh, shit!
Yeah. But then Sting returned.
You see, and I mean, that would have been funny if it was Sting under the Sting mask, because, you know, we do have the history of that. But it wasn't Sting Rock. I'm sorry.
No, who was it?
It was your scapegoat, Jack Perry.
Who had, out of all the big spots in the match, that was the weakest fall of them all.
He had the push off the ladder and then just sat in the corner hook style.
Wow,
pinned by the security.
He got red, and as soon as, like, the shit-eating grin on his face when they took that mask off.
Well, here's the funny thing about all of that. So, he gets in the ring and pushes over the ladder. The security are on him like that. What I don't understand is, so the security get him into the corner, and they pull the mask off in front of the camera, and you get that shit-eating grin like Casey talked about of him, like, looking at the camera and smiling. And the security guards kind of back off him a little bit.
Yeah.
And then he just casually walks out. Like, you would think the security guards would still be like, nah, brah, you haven't, like, you tore up your contract. You're not supposed to be here. And they'd, like, shove him, you know, back out of the arena or up the ramp or whatever.
Commentators like, he's trespassing. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And instead, he's just, like, gallivanting his way back, you know, and he throws up the elite sign before he's off of camera. And it's just like,
Which was
are you
nice
guys the worst security ever or what?
Yeah, they are. The elite
maybe
sign
they don't
nice.
Watch. Maybe they don't watch New Japan.
Probably not. The elite sign was nice. Them responding with the elite thing back to him, which was smart. I'm just gonna say this made airing the footage was stupider.
Well, the problem is what was the reaction when they took the mask off?
They popped.
Yeah,
they popped. So now, like, you had Perry help the Young Bucks. In theory, that should be heel.
It was just fine. No, but here's the point. Before we get into that, you didn't need the footage. You didn't need the Bucks referencing him. It would have been a bigger moment if he had just showed up randomly. And then you told the story with the footage of why he was gone.
Yeah.
Then it would have made sense. You told the story backwards. Oh, he got
Tony,
a negative.
Tony kicked him out, but we have his back.
Yeah, the Tony in the interviews was like, yeah, he got the megastar reaction in New Japan in Chicago. Great. That doesn't help your television. That doesn't help your pay-per-view. If he had just showed up with not anyone thinking that he was going to show up, because everyone knew he was going to be there, and that was their justified reason, well, we gave you the story of why he would be in this match. If he had shown up, the internet would have exploded. Everyone would have been, oh my God, what a huge surprise. Everyone knew he was coming. Mm-hmm. Then you tell the story afterwards, him playing the footage of being the scapegoat, not the Young Bucks. Because that made no sense in the story long term. If he shows the footage of, this is where I've been, this is why I was gone, then it would have all made sense. You told the story backwards. He's the scapegoat. The scapegoat should be showing the footage. Not the Young Bucks saying, well, this distracted us. The scapegoat should show the footage. He should show you why he's been gone. Because now it just makes you look stupid why he's been gone. That you just reverse it. Like, they've told some good, they've been telling good stories, but in reverse. And that's sort of a problem right now. A lot of their stories are, they're doing the things in the wrong order of storytelling. And that's a problem, especially with Jack Perry. Given the megastar reaction, great, he's supposed to be the heel. Because that's what you were building him as 9 months ago. What you wanted was babyface? We saw how his babyface run went. It stagnated.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the end of the day, if you want to get things over, if the elite is supposed to be like Okada's the heel and the Bucks are the heels and Jack Perry should join the elite and be a heel, like but they're cool, like they're the NWO, because that's what it's kind of feeling like, trying to get the heat there. You got to do some stuff to really get them over as heels. Trying to act cool. Also, him coming back and he's in this, you know, he should be in a spot where, okay, he's now back. Well, you got to make sure you have a plan for him and don't Wardlow him and just sort of let him drift away and be just a guy. Because then it makes it even 9 months away even worse. Use it to your advantage. Put him in a prime spot. But we'll see. Anyway.
I mean, the right team won.
Yeah. FTR shouldn't be champions. No, it should be the Young Bucks to feed the... Now they have the titles. Okada has the title. It feeds it.
And also, I mean, you had for a while, FTR was like the multi-champ team. They should probably keep away from the tag belts for a while.
They're a team that needs a few months off to just sort of...
Well, I mean, one of them could be getting a few months off. We don't know yet.
Just be just freshen them up a little bit. Anyway, main event. Joe Strickland, world title. Thoughts?
I think he was the... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say the right guy won.
I think the right guy won. I think he was the wrong character coming to the ring.
Mm.
I don't think he's Black Panther. If anything, he's Killmonger.
Yeah.
It fits his style more. And honestly, when you listen to... If you've seen the Black Panther movies and you listen to the way Killmonger talks, it's Swerve. It's like if you wanted to do the thing where eventually he is kind of a tweener, where if he wants to be a bit more vicious, he can be. That's Eric Killmonger. But well, I understand the idea of Black Panther. And
I thought the Killmonger situation. Had the gold suit.
No, well,
like,
I mean...
Like the gold accents in the movie, and Black Panther was purple.
No, Black Panther was silver, but it was still, I don't know, he went Panther, and when they talked about it, it was, they were referencing Panther as opposed to
okay,
Killmonger. But I do have to say, him coming out with that, like, extra little bit to him, deserved. It made mm-hmm. it feel special.
Yeah,
but, I mean, all in all, good match.
It had to follow a lot.
Yeah, this is the problem of running, like, 12 matches and having, Ospreay Danielson, FTR Bucks Ladder, and back then this as the main event.
If those two matches were spread out and gave the crowd time to breathe, would it help?
Yeah.
Yep.
Especially if you had Roderick Strong and Kyle in between, you flip the Bucks match with that match.
Yeah.
You would have had a better, like, it would have felt better. Like, it would have given time to breathe, but you went from greatest wrestling match ever to car crash ladder match. To a straight-up wrestling match at the end.
Yeah. Well, and I hate to say this. We talked about it when we talked about Kyle and Roderick. Like, you had no investment in that match. You were going to get a good match just because of the two workers in it, but you had no investment, so if you needed to kind of come down after a match, it would have been a good kind of cleanser.
Yeah, and it was a title match, so you could justify it being semi-main event.
Yeah, because that belt has main event at pay-per-views.
Yeah.
It just, match was fine. As you guys mentioned, the right person won. They finally, they did so. If he lost, he was effectively done.
Yeah, if you didn't pull the trigger on Swerve here, like, I know some people were, I was reading someone talking about this, and they were just like, oh, but, you know, they didn't pull the trigger on Cody and Roman at one, and it turned into, like, a bigger story with that. No, with this, you had to strike while the iron was hot, especially because you had just effectively turned Swerve face.
Mm-hmm.
And we had talked about on here, this idea of, like, Swerve had to come out on Dynamite to be kind of like, yeah, I know I've done some really kind of sketchy shit, and I've got to atone for that.
Yeah, and number two, this is already number two title match.
Yeah.
Not number one. The comparison, Cody losing. This is number two. He lost six weeks ago.
The first one was a...
He was still in the title match. It was still a title match. This is the second... It would have been a failed second opportunity of winning a title.
Yeah.
That's the problem. He had a win.
I get that.
Kicking
out of the Muscle Buster was an impressive spot for him.
Yep.
Because normally, you know, we talk about protective moves. The Muscle Buster usually puts people down. Although there was that little bit of a botch at the finish.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was supposed to be. I don't know if it was supposed to be like a sunset bomb or if it was supposed to be like he landed better off of coming over Joe and then trying to get into the powerbomb spot. But it just seemed like they fumbled something. And he still pulled off the powerbomb. He still hit the stomp. But it was like, you just kind of look at that and you're like, what was supposed to happen there? Because that's what I've kind of found myself doing, was like, what was that supposed to be?
Yeah, but in the end, Swerve Strickland is now your world champion, the first AEW Black champion, Black world champion. He deserves to be in the spot. They should push him in the spot. If he loses in 3-4 months, please don't, internet, don't be mad.
I've already heard people say, essentially, they expect him to lose at Wembley.
That's fine.
Because they think it's going to be Bruv.
That's fine.
Yep.
Passing the belt around on your top guys who are the most over works in professional wrestling. Austin, Rock, Hunter, Taker, McFoley, they bounced the belt around. Guess what? They were all top guys who had the belt. Bouncing around is a good thing.
And that match would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep them strong until Wembley and then have like a really good match between those two. Absolutely. I'd be with that.
Yeah. It makes them all strong. Calling someone a former world champion is a good idea. Having more of them in your company is a good idea because then guess what? They become a 2-time or 3-time world champion, which is why, side tangent, when Cody loses the belt, people don't be mad either because he'll be a 2-time and a 3-time because him only being a 1-time champion kind of hurts his case a little bit just holding it once. One 9-month title reign and then he's done. It's like, oh, okay, multiple time champions is not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Holding a title more than once, not a bad thing. Swerve winning this belt, losing it in 5 months, 4 months, winning it back a year later, that the key is winning it back.
Yeah.
Is a good thing, and especially because now you're running more than 4 shows a year in terms of pay-per-view. You're running, what, 10?
Something like that.
Yeah, you're just a month away from the next one.
You're going to have to do more title changes. It's going to have to, like, title reign can't be as justified because you're going to run out of believability at some point.
Well, and as you talked about, we're getting to the point where you've got a lot of people that are considered main event talent. You've got, you know, like an Adam Page, who was a former world champion. You've got an Adam Cole sitting in the wings whenever he's ready. MJF, whenever the time comes, you know, if he's re-signed that contract, probably has. If he's re-signed that contract, he's there. You know, Will Ospreay, Okada at some point will probably get towards that main event picture. You can say Jay White. I think he still needs some rehab from his run from
Moxley, Omega. You got plenty of
Claudio. I know, but I mean, he is a former world champion with Ring of Honor.
Yeah, but I think he's the next tier down. But I get your point. There's plenty of people in your company who should be world champion, and having a guy hold it for a year kind of slows down everyone's progress. And having 10 pay-per-views a year, you can have someone hold the belt for 3 months, someone else win it, lose it back in two. You're not killing them or the belt. It makes it a hot commodity, and everyone is fighting at their best to get it. And that's kind of what the Attitude Era, everyone's favorite era, when the title changed hands a lot.
Well, you also look at how many wrestlers they tout as multi-time champions. Ric Flair, Triple H, John Cena, even Randy Orton, The Rock, Stone Cold. Like, yeah, they all had multiple championships. So there's nothing wrong with having a guy win a title multiple times and saying, oh, this is your, you know, X amount of time champion person. So,
yeah.
Well, hell, even Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, they had bouts with the belt, and then all of a sudden it, you know, oh, dropped the title.
Yeah, because, don't have to have the belt and be a former world champion, but you're still in the main event. You're still seen as the main eventer. That's the key. Yeah. Like, more guys that seem like they're main eventers as former world champions, it's better for your company, especially when you're trying to establish things.
And just like we were saying earlier with Wardlow, If he had the title once and be like, he was a champion, then we wouldn't be talking about how they've seemingly dropped the ball with them. They could be like, you could be like Wardlow, former world champion, still in the contention.
Yep. Well, you know who's a good example of that? Strowman.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually made a world champion at one point.
He was.
I mean, was it the greatest run? No, but he can still have former world champion. And when he gets into a match with, you know, Roman or whoever is a title holder, it's like, this is a credible contender because he's held that belt before.
Yep.
But with that, some housekeeping, right?
All right, we have our housekeeping here. We have 11 people involved with this, including 3 people on the Facebook group, which Rock did not tell me about, and I saw this morning.
I did it very late.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So we had 11 people here. In last place, in 11th, going 4-7 because they forgot to pick a match in the chat when they did it, it's Matt.
Whoops.
Just above him, going 5-7, picking all the matches, was the 8-ball. Just putting that out there. In 9th place, going a perfect 500, 6-6, is one, Godfather of Extreme Rob Parks. Mm-hmm. In tied for seventh place at 7-5, we have Subway and Amy. Tied for fourth, going 8-4, we have Tim, Tommy C, and our AEW expert, Lindsay Ward.
Ooh. You know what's funny about that is that when Tim was going to do his picks, I was just like, just say you're going to pick all the same matches as Lindsay. It'll be fine. And they ended up tying anyway.
Yep. tied for second, going 9-3, my co-hosts on this show, Rock and Keishi.
Yay.
And alone in first place, going 10-2, your leader of the Excalibur Challenge, the intern.
Well done.
Huzzah.
Huzzah. But that'll do it for Cibarito Not So Live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Programming Thursday, The Rack, 10 p.m. Eastern. GM Battles Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern. WTR Game Night on Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern, followed by Cibarito Live, 11:30 p.m. Eastern. Sunday night, it's WTR Sunlight Wrestle Talk Radio. Backlash Preview, 10 p.m. Eastern. Monday night, it's Raw Post Show, 11 p.m. Eastern. Cibarito Not So Live returns Memorial Day?
Yep, 1 month from now.
Great, lovely, fantastic. Spend your Memorial Day with us, covering Double or Nothing. yay.
Which is a long weekend of wrestling, y'all. We have a SmackDown, a King and Queen of the Ring on Saturday morning or afternoon, depending on where you are, and then AEW Double or Nothing.
And one person who does not have the Monday off because he lives in Canada.
Doesn't Canada have a certain day like that, too? No?
It's the week before.
Oh, it's this week before this month. Oh. GG's to you. GG's to you. You can find Keishi all over social media at...
You can find me at Kyle Driver on the X Twitter and Instagram. Yeah, sometimes I post when I remember and have things worth posting. Otherwise, look for the link in the descriptions to my merch store where I plan to have at least one new design by the summer. That's a promise that I'm going to put in the internet to keep me accountable.
Brent's on socials at...
You can find me on X/Twitter/Instagram/Threads at Kane Kittens or at Kane.Kittens, one amalgamation or another of that. So you can find me there, and you can see if I make friends when I watch AEW pay-per-views, because that tends to happen at times.
Indeed. Chat, if you have Amazon Prime link to your Twitch account, it's called Prime Game Support Channel by clicking the purple rectangle button below the screen. You can use create code ROCKS like before an item shop. Hashtag epic partner. We will see you for programming all week long. Cibarito Not So Live returns in a month, I guess, for Double or Nothing. We'll be streaming live right here at wildtalkradio.com, twitch.tv/WTRLive, and
cbradiolive.com.
Is impossible. Jump to a grip, I don't sweat, but I grip. Make a move, it's a grip, great boss, it's a hit, it's a hit, hit, hit. Dog, rich, 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 chin, music, it's a hit. Turn table, you get hit. Hot, bro, catch a vibe.
WildTalkRadio.com.